I've hit record. We've got to get right to it today because I got to get on the road. Where am I going? I'm going to North Carolina, Dan.
Oh, that you're going right away.
As soon as this thing is over, I got to get out of here. Love to chat. Got to go. That type of thing.
How long is it going to take you to get there?
Well, if I drove straight through, you know, 12 or 13 hours, depending on how long each charge thing is, because I can't stop for gas, Dan, as you know.
Right, yeah. You got to stop for some of the juice.
Stop for the juice. That's right. That's what I'll be doing, Freddie. I'll be stopping for the juice.
You get in the juice. You got to get in the juice.
But the car plans that all that out for you, Dan.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, so that's 12 hours, but are you going straight there?
No, sir. We're going to go 6 or 7 hours today and then the rest tomorrow. And then we start golfing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then I'll start making my way back here.
Dan, yesterday I came up with a little, you know, ditty for Howard, and he chuckled. I said, after all the way, you know, you explained how that car can drive itself. I said, why don't you fly to North Carolina and just get the car to meet you there?
You see what he did there, Dan?
Then you'll have a car while you're there.
Self-driving.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Howard. I'm here.
and when he said it, Dan, I did chuckle. Daniel, I'd like you to begin the program, and then soon as the program is officially started,
then leave.
No. I want you to stay because Dan, I had a dream. I had a Dan Duran dream, and it was quite upsetting.
Wow. This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Toronto, from our Brampton facility with a soon-to-be-open pool, and from Peterborough at Lisa's dining room table next to trendy black sticks in a vase. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Insert Your Name Here Zoom Theater, and brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now here are two men who, when the sun rises into a clear sky, sing songs with the word happy in them until they see the morning's first human, and then the singing stops. It's Humble and Fred.
And Dan Duran, thank you very much. Jeff Lumby joins us for his regular monthly visit. And we're going to talk condos, the condo report again today. I'm sure we'll reflect on what's happening on day one of the many trials, the curious case of Donald Trump. Some great advice I found from Louis C.K. We really haven't talked about, but you guys were talking about it when I was getting ready here, about Bill Maher. And there's that Canadian thing, but there's another clip of Bill Maher I thought was interesting. I know, I'm sorry.
There is another one where Bill Maher is talking to Piers Morgan. Did you see that one where he's talking about the Gaza, the protesters, all that stuff?
Off the top.
Well, it's an interesting. I don't know. I can't come up with a different word. It's an interesting clip because he's talking about how the chants have gone from death to Israel. You know, that's everywhere, you know, and of course, all the Jew hatred. And he's commenting on a protest in Michigan where they were starting to yell death to America.
Yeah.
And so all that's coming up.
Even in Toronto here, I saw a clip yesterday. There was some kind of a rally going on, pro-Palestinian rally, and they announced that at that moment that the drones had started dropping bombs on Israel, and everybody started cheering and yelling Ali Akbar. Is it Ali Akbar, or is it Allison Akbar, is it Snack Bar?
Yeah,
Ali,
it's Crunch Bar, I believe. It's I'll have a crunchy bar.
Holy snack bar. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm dead. I'm going to be killed today. I'm dead.
No, well, yeah, I saw that. This is a curious time. Everything is curious today.
It is. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen anything here in Bramtooney along those lines. Although I did back in the winter South Brampton, I saw one protest. It didn't really impede my progress of driving, but I don't know how I would handle that. As I said, I've got low tolerance for it all.
Drive away.
No, the thing don't. I don't understand a lot of it, obviously. I don't understand how. And I often think to myself about, I see the people screaming and that protest you're talking about, I saw it too. And everyone's got their scarves on, the kafaya they're called, and they got their face covered for the most part. And they're yelling all these things, all this hatred about a country and a people, the Jews, of course, the root of all their evil. And I keep thinking to myself, okay, so when this is over, you go home and then turn on the news, or do you watch the Netflix? What do you like? Do you just go back to your regular lives? And that's when I would like to talk to him. Like, so what'd you do today? You went down to the protest. You hate Jews, but now are you going to watch the Leafs tonight or go back to being a, you know, regular Canadian?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if that last thing is possible, because if you're that passionate about what's going on over there, then I don't know how much you've adopted this land. But again, that may not be fair. You know, would it be tough or would it be impossible? Would it be logical to have a law in this country that you can't protest things going on in different countries? Protest all you want about issues in this country. Again, that's a pipe dream of mine, because that's where the trouble starts. Or raising flags of other countries at City Hall. Like, fuck it. Canadian, Ontario, that's it. Just have a flat-out rule that we're not interested in your problems.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen.
I know.
It's more about the, like everyone is allowed to speak their minds. And we don't have the same First Amendment covenant that they do in the States. We have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but it's different. Mm. My beef is, there's got to be a closer eye on hate speech, because you can protest what Israel does or doesn't do all day long, but when there's so much disruption of Jewish people's everyday lives in Toronto. It's unbelievable. Yes. Like that article our chief political correspondent, Julie Fleming, sent us. And she sends us stuff every day. And we appreciate it. I really appreciate the free New York Times article she sends. But that article from The Sun,
yeah.
Like all those, like there's got to be a law against doing that. You can be against and pro-Palestinian all you want, against Israel. But you can't disrupt a synagogue and hospitals and universities. Like, that's got to have, there's got to be a limit to that.
The hypocrisy of it, Howard. A lot of the protests here are, you know, by pro-Palestinian, that innocent people in Palestine are being affected. Yet you'll turn around and impede a Jewish guy's business in Toronto. He's an innocent person. You know what I mean? What's somebody that's running a business or is carrying on their life, an Israeli, a Jew, in Toronto, if you want to disrupt their life, well, I know you're not killing them per se, but still, it's just hypocritical to do that.
Well, it's hypocritical, and it should be. There should, that's, like, forget, you know, flags are going to fly, and you can protest all you want. But there's stuff going on, and it has been since, well, it's always been going on, but since October 7th, it's just, I mean, you guys, you got to admit by now, even you, Dan, who, you know, likes to be very measured on these things, you've got to admit, like, this anti-Semitism is just fucking bananas.
I do agree. That, I mean, you look at the stats and you see they're up, and then and it's a sign of the times of, you know, the way
they're up from high to ridiculous. That's the problem.
Exactly. And how is that being, how is it allowed to go on? Because if it was any other minority group, any other ethnic group, Asians, gays, trans, Italians, people would lose their fucking minds. But for some reason, it's allowed to go on.
Joe Warmington, he's turned into a bit of a whack job, Joe, but he wrote a good article about that, you know, and that's was part of the spin. If you took any other person, you know, of color, of a different religion, and did to them what is happening to the Jews in Toronto,
yeah,
the reaction would be completely different. Why is that? That's very, very disturbing.
And not to, I saw the article. We're talking about the same thing. Okay. But I've been saying that since October. People have been saying it almost immediately. The kind of vitriol, like when I saw those people in Australia in October yelling death to the Jews and people putting gas the Jews all over a building.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would you that would not be tolerated. The kind of hatred, like, wouldn't be tolerated. And why it's being tolerated is way beyond my understanding.
Well, yeah, because it's been tolerated forever, Howard.
Yeah.
We've talked about this long before October 7th. Why is it synagogues and Jews can be attacked and be listen? A second place is a distant second when it comes to hate crimes in Toronto. Traditionally, Jews are at the top of the list, always have been. And again, whoever is second place, be it, you know, black people, whatever, they're a distant second. And yet, for some reason, that's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, but, yeah. What were you going to say there, Danny?
Well, just the one thing that has always never made sense to me is, like, I don't know what the end game is when people are protesting in this country about stuff going on in another country that they have no effect, can have no effect on.
Yeah, that's
I don't understand the point. Like, what do you, you know, I guess to show the world, you know, doesn't really like it, whatever, but it's not going to have any effect on what Netanyahu does in Israel or what Hamas does. It has no effect.
Fred says too about why where's the protest? Like, when, where are all the Jewish people protesting what Hamas did to them? You know where they are? Mm-hmm. They're in their fucking homes scared. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Dan, what good will it do? You know, what good is it going to do to, you know, go down to Yonge Dundas Square and clash with these people? But you don't see that. Like, there should have been mass protests. Considering what happened on that day, where's the outpouring of sympathy and empathy and all the other pathies, the many pathies?
Lots of pathies.
Say that?
Lots of pathies.
There's lots of pathies, but there was none. Like, where are all the protests for what happened on that day? And same with this Iranian thing. Like, by the way, the video, did you see the video of this system that the Israeli has of knocking shit out of the sky?
Yeah.
Like, that's some, Dan, that's some sci-fi shit going on there.
That's right there, mm-hmm. Yeah. But don't forget the drones that come in from Iran are like, they're planes. They're not like rockets. Mm-hmm. So there's actually jets that are firing at those things and taking them down too.
Well, right. Whatever it is, Dan, like 99% of the shit that Iran lobbied at them,
right,
didn't get through.
I find the whole thing sort of, on some level, disingenuous, too. And I've mentioned this many times. It's, you know, all the Palestinian protests here and everything. Again, you don't, the Palestinians, they never mention Hamas. And again, they never mention the hostages. It's almost like they don't want to, because within their minds, again, the end game is to get rid of Israel completely. Because we know at the very base, that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this, okay, this is an opening for us now to push on this. If the hostages are released or Hamas comes to an end, then we don't have an excuse now. Like, what's our next move for getting rid of Israel completely? It's a cesspool is what it is.
Yeah, and there's been, you know, multiple times now, and no one seems to want to talk about this in that group, that there have been offers made, ceasefires proposed, negotiations for these hostages who are mostly now, most of them are dead.
Yes.
They're just dead. So where's the outpouring of, it just seems so illogical. And why the world, you know, listen, we're never going to answer this. We know the answer is people hate fucking Jews. Well, why the world sits by idly and goes, yeah, I guess this is all right. I guess this is fine.
You know, I can't figure it out. I find it frustrating. Like, even in Toronto, there was posters Why in Toronto? I don't know, but posters of hostages in Israel, and they were defamed and swastikas painted on them. These are of kids. Like, where's your motivation there? You know?
Well, they got caught up in it. They get caught up in this. They think they're part of something. And I think that a lot of it is that, too. You know, this TikTok generation and the kids on social media and how they get caught up in this wave of hatred that they don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think a lot of the reaction has been the Netanyahu government's response to this has been kind of outsized as far as the number of people that are dying over there, and people wanted to stop. So, like, you know, like whatever you believe the number is of, you know, if it is 30,000 people compared to, you know, the 1,200 people that were killed at that, you know, peaceful rock concert, I mean, which is horrific. But then again, there's, you know, 70,000 injured people. There's 30,000, you know, all Hamas, or not, rather members of the, you know, in, is it Gaza, or I lost track of the Gaza, or the it's a Gaza Strip, and what's the other one? Anyway, wherever they're attacking right now, people see that and say, well, okay, this seems outsized. Like, I know they want to go and get every member of Hamas and kill that person, all those people. But then, really, at what cost? And are you actually going to ever, is it possible to get rid of every member of Hamas? I don't think so. So you're creating more members of Hamas by, you know, killing fathers and children and mothers and, you know, with the stuff that's going on. Again, this is a Netanyahu government. This is not what, I don't even know if it's the majority of Israelis want to have this go down the way it is going down.
So what would you have done once they hit 1,200 in Gaza, call it off, now we're even? Like, what does that mean? Like, I don't get that. You know what it is? Don't fuck with us. That's what it is. These Israel have been putting up with it for decades. Now, when you go into our country and you start burning babies in cribs, it's don't fuck with us. Sorry.
So we'll
that's
do it
the
to
way
you.
I look.
Well, huh? and
we'll do it to you tenfold or
well,
20,
the
you know,
thing
like,
is,
well,
the,
maybe you know, sometimes. Yep, yeah.
Dan's got a point, and I agree to a point that at some point, lots of points in this sentence, that at some juncture there has to be a different tack, because this isn't going to work. Their response was their response, Dan, and however it netted out from Netanyahu, it was what Fred said, is after like they've been out of that area for 20 years. The last time, you know, there's been all these infatadas. There's been this perpetual blowing up of Israeli citizens and suicide bombers. Mm-hmm. And so this time was too much for them. And so you can say, well, the response doesn't fit the... Well, they shouldn't have done it in the first place. And they could all stop right now. And by the way, I always point this out to people. Do you not know that Hamas is shelling them every day? So why don't they stop doing that if they want to protect their citizens?
Howard, but wait a minute. There's another comparison here, too. How many Ukrainians have died? How come that isn't the issue that the Palestinians in Gaza? How come, you know, very rarely do we hear about how many Ukrainians have died at the hands of the Russians. And I think, again, it's another Jew thing. It's blame the Jews, get mad at the Jews for the Gaza thing. But the Russians are killing Ukrainians, probably at the same rate or more. And that's not such a big issue. I am, you know, like, why is that?
Well, it was a big issue. I don't know if that's a fair comparison. There's a lot of...
Why?
Well, because it's not the same...
Because there's three times as many Russian and Ukrainians dead in that war. Then there's close to 90 or 100,000 Ukrainian and Russian is the death toll over the last couple of years in this continuing conflict. But that doesn't seem to be as big a deal.
Yeah, so we're
as,
numb to it now? We're so, numb yeah, to that.
Well, I don't know. And so I don't think the world is numb to it. The world is seeing the number of people have injured and people being killed and just starting to ask, you know, like what What's the end game?
Yeah, okay. And that's, but again, what Fred's saying is there's been, I'm looking at it now, U.S. officials in August put the number of Ukrainian soldiers killed at 70,000, as many as 120,000 injured. Uh-huh. But
what
but,
about citizens even as well?
But I'm going to give you, Dan, I give you this point. It's horrific. And mm-hmm. but just what do you remember what I said? There's been many attempts to cease fire, to allow, mm-hmm. you know, intervention. And it's always refused. It's kind of like Hamas doesn't want this to stop, Dan. It's kind of like there was a bill that was put before Congress to do something about the southern border about a month and a half ago. And they turned it down because they want it to be a shit show until Trump gets in. It's almost like the Republicans, all they want to talk about is border insecurity. But when there was actually something on the table to do something about it, they shot it down because they don't want it fixed.
Political. It's politically all political.
And that's why I said, listen, Dan, there's no way we're going to say you're not right in terms of it being horrific and maybe too much. And it's a tragedy and you know, and.
You say, you know, Hamas doesn't want it to end. I totally agree. They don't, you know, like little stinking rats. They remain in their holes. But I question some of these protesters, too. Again, it's an opening to, they actually think this is a chance, you know, to maybe on some level roll over Israel. You know, if the Iranians get involved and other people in the Middle East get involved. You know, a lot of the protests are, to me, are misdirected, but what do I know?
That's probably true, but it's not the majority of people out there protesting. I mean, the protests you're pointing to are not, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, you've lost me now. What are the majority of people out there protesting? We all know they're protesting that Jews exist.
Well, there's some of that for sure. I'm not sure that everyone's, you know, saying that like what the protests in Canada are all about, the Jews shouldn't exist anymore.
Well, from the river to the sea basically means wipe out Israel. You know, which, by the way, I'm not sure if you've, you know, checked your notes, but that's predominantly a Jewish population.
No, I get it. I know that that's and I think that a lot of people don't even know what that means, but because, like, getting on the bandwagon.
Well, and that goes to my point about a lot of these kids that get involved with it.
Yeah.
Don't understand it historically. Don't understand why Israel existed in the first place. They just want to go along with this sentiment that seems to be, you know, kind of a cool thing to be part of. Put on the scarf, cover your face, yell death to America, you know, from the river to the sea, and now you're part of something.
I get it. I'm just saying that I don't think it's the majority of people in Canada are doing that. It's a small amount of people that are propagating this.
Not the majority of people, but I'd say a good portion of the people protesting are.
Okay, sure.
Like, what are they? What are they protesting? They think they're just protesting Netanyahu?
Well, I would say that that's a big part of it. That I mean, there's so many aspects to this that it's difficult to actually say because we don't. But it gets all wound up into broad strokes that don't make sense. Well, yeah.
And broad strokes being, we hate Jews.
Right. Well, I mean, I think more right. What's standing out to people right now is the number of people that are dying and starving, and the number of the people who are trying to help with aid, the aid workers that have been killed, an unusual number of people in that regard. The hospitals have been destroyed in that area. It's like the people are appalled at what is going on, and mm-hmm. it's ruthless what the Israeli army is doing right now there under the direction of the Netanyahu government, mm-hmm. which has, you know, it's a coalition government of extremely right-wing people in order for Netanyahu to take power in the first place. It's a really wild political situation there. And, you know, I think it's the defense minister and the foreign relations
minister. No, I'm with you on that. I know.
It's ridiculous. And so is there ever going to be, I guess the solution is to just blow up the whole area, kill everyone, and then we'll be fine. Then Israel will be great. It doesn't make any, I mean, I know that's what Hamas wants with Israel. It seems that with the Israeli government wants the same for all of the Palestinians in that area.
You know what Hamas does? They use their own citizens, Palestinians, as human shields.
Okay.
Well, I know, but this is what bothers me with a lot of the protesting. We got to get rid of Hamas. If Palestinian people called for the end of Hamas tomorrow, you know, or asked or demanded through all these protests, release the hostages, free our people. But you don't see any of that. That's why I'm a bit hardened on this.
I understand that. Again, it's multi-layered. It doesn't make sense. You're trying to make it really, you know, black and white and just a few issues. It's not that.
No, I tend to understand. Not that I would say I agree with you, Dan, but I understand with what you're saying that it is not as simple as what Fred's saying. It's too bad. It's too bad. It's not, because at its core had. You know, let's just go back to day one. Don't come in and attack 1,200 people in a most vile and, you know, really horrific way. Maybe don't do that and none of this would happen. Their response was, you know, there's no way to argue that Israel's response has been, you know, maybe over the top or too much. And it, but Dan, look what they're trying to do. Did Hamas send flyers to the Israelis saying, hey, by the way, we're going to be attacking you October 7th, so maybe clear out? No, but every day Israel does that, you know. And like I said, my point, I want you to remember this: every day there are missiles being fired at Israeli citizens. The only reason the death toll isn't 30,000 is because they have better defense.
Mm-hmm. And remember, when Israel issued those warnings to the Palestinian people to move out of the area, which is awful, who would want to do that? Hamas impeded that, made it difficult for them to leave because they wanted them as shields. Nice, eh?
Yeah, they're a good bunch.
Hamas is, we're not going to...
Yeah, Hamas. Dan's not saying Hamas is good.
I know he's not.
Hamas no good.
But the thing is, it's just like any government. You know, you vote a government in, which the Palestinian people did with Hamas. You realize, we made a mistake here.
And you can't get him out.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, the elections were what, in 2007? I mean, that's, I can't remember the exact date.
Hamas has been in charge for 20 years. Dan, I think we should wrap this up because...
You've got a dream to talk about.
I got a dream about Dan to talk about. It was a funny little cute thing. And now in light of all this.
Yeah.
But my thing is just, listen, and of course I believe all of this is religious based. All of it. It's, you know, it's a crackpot bunch of numbskulls that believe in this pamphlet that was printed. What else is it? This historic hatred for one another is, you know, based on this weird religion. It's all weird. The Judaism, all of it.
Howard, let me just quickly, before we go, a little town. Next to me, I'm walking down the main street yesterday and I look in the window and there's a poster there that says Sikh flag raising at City Hall this weekend or something. And I'm thinking, why? Like, why? Because I'm totally tuned in to what's going on here in Brampton, where there's a lot of Indian people. But within that community, there are different religions and they hate each other. Why raise a Sikh flag at City Hall? For what reason? You know, it's a religious thing. It's just going to piss other people off and then make those other people want their flag raised. This is Canada. This is Ontario. Why do we do that? Why do we bend to that stuff? And the point being, you mentioned it all religious based. Like, you're raising a religious flag for what reason in Canada?
Yeah, to be inclusive, I guess.
What good can come from that?
Yeah.
Well, it's inclusion. To demonstrating inclusion of all.
Yeah, but it's inclusion to the point where, like, I don't know, are there Canadian flag raisings in India?
Well, they probably wouldn't even consider it.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, other countries, whatever they do, that's it doesn't have anything to do with us. That's this is how we run our countries.
So. No, I know, but if that's called inclusive inclusion or being inclusive, but it creates division.
You know, I'm not saying that it's. I don't have an opinion one way or the other. It's like I understand why they would do it, but also I understand your point of view. It's like, well, you interfere.
How about, hey, you know what? This is Canada. We raise the Canadian flag, and they.
Yeah. How you can raise that? You can raise the flags you want in your homes.
Yes, exactly,
Dan.
Yeah,
I would like to now tell you about a dream I had.
I had a dream.
Okay. I had a dream. It's that time of the night where, you know, you wake up. I woke up about 3, and then I had a great goes back to us. You know, when he goes back to sleep. That's what I call them. I call them goes back to us. They're my favorite. Freddie, do you like
Latin,
a...
But it's not.
What's that, Dan?
It sounds Latin, but it's not.
Freddie, do you like a nice goes back to us?
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
They're just the best, you know, when you... sitting there drifting off, and I usually have the most vivid dreams, so I don't know, maybe subconsciously I was thinking about you too. So the dream is very simple. The three of us were doing our show remotely. Like, for some reason, we were out on somebody's property, and something happened during the show, maybe a discussion like we just had. That part was unclear to me. What was clear to me is after the show was over, Dan storms away from the broadcast position.
What?
Yes, he stormed away.
Why?
Angry at us.
Why?
Well, this is what I went to find out. So I find Dan, and he's very, very upset at something that happened on the show. And he's the first thing is he's doing this weird Dan Duran thing where he's coming up to different. He comes up to a table and moves it a bit. He comes up to a cage, moves it a bit. He's just moving things slightly, which I at first in my dream, I'm like, well, that's odd. Because he's not really doing anything with these objects. He's just moving them a little bit as to put the Dan Duran stamp on them. And then I see in his right hand is a ball peen hammer. I'm like, oh, great.
Oh, no.
Here we go. At least I'm hoping it was a ball peen hammer, if you know what I mean. I'm like, okay, here we go. Dan's finally snapped, and he's going to bludgeon one of us.
Ooh.
After, you know, all the crap he takes from us on this show. And so I'm like, Dan, like, you know, I'm trying to find out what the matter was. First thing that made me feel great in my dream, he goes, it's Fred. I'm like, oh, great. Fred's going to get bludgeoned.
This isn't a nightmare.
I'm like, sure, great. Dan. I'm like, yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah.
My first thing is relief. It's not me. I go, Dan, like, and Dan is literally fuming with it, and he keeps pounding the hammer into his hand, like he's on a bludgeoning on the warpath.
Yeah.
And then I said, Dan, what was it? What did Fred say?
What did I do?
You're going to be disappointed. Dan says, he called me a farmer. I was like, what? What? That was it. That was the whole dream. You were storming around this person's property after the show, and you were going to bludgeon Fred because I think it was in the context that you live in Peterborough, or, you know, that part wasn't completely clear.
Believe me, I think over the years there have been times Dan has wanted to bludgeon me with a ball peen hammer, but it wouldn't be over that.
No.
So fine. There you go, Dan.
Take that as a compliment, but yeah. Well, okay.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I was in the dream. I was thinking, well, this has got to be something horrible. And it just turned out that you were going to bludgeon Fred because he called you a farmer on the show. Anyway.
Right.
And then I woke up after a delicious goes back to us. All right, nice. We got to move on. Daniel's news today. Man, there's so much other stuff. You know, actually, I want to get to a couple of things before Dan leaves. But so y'all remember years ago when Louis C.K. had that incident where
he was canceled.
During the Me Here. Remember the Me Here times, Dan?
Yeah.
You know, the whole hashtag Me Here movement. And
yeah.
For you people who don't remember. What's that?
Me here too, yeah.
Me here too. You don't, for you people who don't remember Louis C.K., a couple of young comedian, lady comedians came up to his room and he pleasured himself in front of them. Mm-hmm. I came across this clip, and I think it's an older one, but it's a pretty funny little clip of Louis C.K. explaining how we all have, you know, our thing.
Here's some advice that really only I can give you. If you ever ask somebody, can I jerk off in front of you? Just let me finish. I mean, if you ever ask somebody, may I jerk off in front of you? And they say yes. Just say, are you sure? You all have your thing. I don't know what your thing is. You're so fucking lucky that I don't know what your thing is. Do you understand how lucky you are that people don't know your fucking thing? Because everybody knows my thing. Everybody knows my fucking thing now. Obama knows my thing. Do you understand how that feels? To know that Obama was like, good Lord.
So there you go. It's just a little bit.
That's funny.
Are you sure?
You know, that's just so the best way to handle stuff. Get out in front of it like that. Like, what do you say to him now? Like, you know, it's not when he walks up on stage, people are thinking, oh, yeah, he's funny, but that creepy thing he did.
That weird thing.
But to actually talk about it, it's great.
But I also like
same with that Jeffrey Toobin on CNN. Like, he's back on now, right? Like,
and what did he do?
Jerking off. He thought it, you know, it was like a Zoom meeting, and he didn't know the camera was on. He was jerking it, you know. And then they took him off air, but he's back on now, and he confronted it. He said, "Yeah, it was horrible. It was a stupid thing to do. I should have checked my camera."
Yeah,
move on.
You know, I mean, listen, we've all been on a Zoom meeting and wanted to start jerking off, but you know, most of us. Anyway, but I also like the second part of that premise that, you know, you're so lucky that that I don't know your thing, because Obama knows my thing was very funny. All right, so Dan Duran, I wanted you to go away with a smile on your face.
Thank you. I'll go polish my ball peen hammer and be back with you.
And I, you know, even in my dream, I thought, you know, you don't hear the word bludgeon as much as you know, once did. There's not as much bludgeon. I think people have gotten a more efficient way. There's not as much bludgeoning as there once was.
I just keep thinking of a ball peen smashing a skull and how quickly it would just turn to mush. That's what I'm thinking of. My God, Dan. What were you thinking?
Well, Liam,
sorry, Fred.
Fred, that is the point.
Just don't call me a farmer.
Don't call him a farmer, and you won't get your head smashed in with a ball peen hammer. Yeah. All right, we've got some business to take care of before Jeff Lumbee joins us. Freddie?
Yeah, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Ooh, we like it here at HumbleAndFredRadio.com Incorporated. Yes, we do. It's worked for us over the past several years. You know, I talked about how he breaking my tooth in the Dominican. The first day back, I went to my dentist. And of course, you know, he goes in, he fixes in, he fixed her all up really nice. And I just walk out. Why? Because we're part of the Chambers plan, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, which has a great dental plan. The one that we're in, prescriptions and therapies and mental health component, HR, the Teladoc system, on and on and on. It's there for you when you need it. Go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote today, and you're on your way. Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan.
I just wanted to mention our friend Doug Cochran from yesterday. I think we told the story of his kids have set up a retro arcade, and he didn't have to, but he sent us some dough, and you know, I thought, you know, I told him yesterday, you didn't have to do that, but we'd be happy to mention your kid's place. It's pretty cool. 140 of your favorite arcade games. Go check it out. There's birthday parties. It's a great place. Maybe even do it. If you're looking for locations, you know, this is a good place for it. It's Pixel Paradise Arcade, all one word. pixelparadise.ca. Not the all one word part. It's just pixelparadisearcade.ca. Have a look at it. Some great pictures. It looks like a fun place. It's in Angus, Ontario. Where's Angus, Ontario?
I think it's up between where I am in Brampton. If you drew a line to, like, Barrie, it's somewhere in that area, I believe. Angus.
Yeah.
You know, Alliston, Angus, that, you know, that way, I believe, Howard. Not far.
Well, anyway, go check it out, pixelparadisearcade.ca. And now, live from France. Live.
Parlez-vous français?
Live from France. He is the host of Jeff and Julie Moved to France during a global pandemic. It's our friend Jeff Lumby. I had a... hey, Jeff.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. I had a conversation where your name came up a couple days ago.
That can never be good.
No, it was actually really good because I was talking to somebody, a friend of my wife, Randy's, who was asking me about doing a podcast. A podcast.
Yes.
Doing. And she's talking about what the name should be. And I said, well, the name.
Here's the thing. It should be very short. It should be a succinct, right. You know.
Try and make it as simple as possible. And I said, well, you know, what I said was, you know, listen, the name could be whatever you want it to be. And I said, for instance, my favorite name of a podcast is my buddy Lumby. She said, what does he call it? I said, well, he moved to France during a global pandemic. So he calls it Jeff and Julie Moved to France. And I had a nice little laugh about the whole thing because...
Well, you know, one of the things I love about our title is it's the title and mission statement all in one.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know what it's about.
And once people discover it, they would just go, oh, I got to listen to Jeff and Julie this week.
Yes.
Exactly, Freddie. Yes.
Well, exactly. And the other thing I said about you, because I used it as an example of somebody that had talked to me about doing a podcast and then, you know, finally found something they were passionate about. And I said, I think, and we talked about the genesis of other ideas you had. And I said, you know, and that idea turned into north of 100 episodes, which is way, you know, above the average of people who try doing podcasts to get to episode 3 and go, well, this is hard. I didn't count on doing this every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's actually something that I've wondered about because, you know, you guys and along with Toronto Mike and you guys, you're pretty much the pioneers of the podcast industry in Canada. At least you probably date back further than most people. And I was wondering how many times a week or a month or a year do people approach you about, you know, as I did, I wanted to know what the rigors were, what, you know, because I didn't want to just jump in and do 3 and then run away, you know? So how many people, like, how often are you talking about podcasts with people who are genuinely interested in getting into it?
It comes up time to time. In fact, there's one on the table right now I have to tell Howard about, wants to take us out for lunch.
Okay, there you go.
It's just amazing how ironic, or anyway, I won't tell you who, because you don't want to hear. Want to take us out for lunch about why, because they want to do a podcast and just some of the ins and outs. But
you know, yeah, Jeff, it's a great question, and I think, you know, it happens less now than it did 10, 11, 12 years ago. In the first few years of it, mm-hmm. it was a novelty in the radio community that we were doing it. And so,
yes, the radio community,
yeah,
for sure.
You know, yeah. we could name you a bunch of big, you know, name broadcasters like yourself that were fascinated by how we had done it. You know, what could they do it? We even gave the studio, Freddie, to a bunch of people we won't name that did. Jeff, I could tell you. Mm-mm. Some people that did 3, 4, and 5 episodes, stand-up comics, radio people, and unlike you and your wife, got to, you know, a month or two in and went, like, this is a lot of work, man.
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
and ended up not doing it, even though we supplied studio, microphones, producers, everything.
Part of that, Howard, too, is they wanted, they expected, like, instant return on it. Well, it just doesn't work that way. You know, thought they'd start making money almost immediately. You do a podcast, you go sell it. Well, it's not that easy.
And one of the reasons that we have the longevity is that's never been a part of it. We don't even want to monetize it.
Right.
So it's, you know, this ours kind of came from, I was sending out, you know, we moved to France and I was sending out, and you guys were included, I'm sending out these little, you know, blurbs about, you know, emails, little newsletters about what was going on here. And we thought there's got to be a better way to do this. And then it sort of came from that. And then took on a different sort of life of its own, and then, you know, became, you know, a travel log of sorts. But also we've made lemonade out of a lot of hurdles here. So it's been, I mean, we have so much fun doing it. Julie's really embraced the looking up stuff, you know, and. And finding out where we should go on our next adventure. So it's become a real fun thing for us.
Well, I'll ask you, let me ask you that question, because up until now, really never thought about it being in reverse. Like, has it made, have doing 100 and, what is it, 110 now, 115?
I think our next one's 112, yeah.
So has doing the podcast enriched your experience there?
Oh, 100%. I mean, It's because it's given us a purpose, like every week. So, you know, like Monday, yesterday, over the morning coffee, Julie's saying, so what are we doing this week? Because, you know, it's almost like doing a morning show. Mm-hmm. What are we doing this week? Because the weather's not great and blah, blah, blah. And we're running out of, you know, close villages to go to. And anyway, we came up with something, and we're off tomorrow. For Wednesday's typically our day to go and, you know, drive to a place. Last week's thing was a real festival for the eyes, I'll tell you. We went to Dordogne, and it's just incredible architecture here. The history, like we said, the guy said, see that chateau there? That's a real young one. That's brand new. It's only 200 years old.
Wow.
Wow. it's good for people that do what we did or do for a living. It's good to stay involved, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, like, absolutely. It's a creative outlet, first of all.
Yes, exactly.
And second of all, you know, our friends and family can kind of keep up with what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we've managed to accrue also, you know, a brand new audience, you know, of people we've never met who were like-minded. They're obviously on the web going, move to France or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then this thing pops up and they become fans of the show.
No, I say that this, we'd probably do this even if we weren't making money off it, because it's great therapy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do with my day to day or week to week if I didn't have this as some kind of a focus, you know. Really, it's fantastic.
Well, and I've been to your place in France, and I got to experience a little of what you guys do on a, you know, daily, weekly basis. And you know, that's why I sort of just for now, for some reason, it occurred to me, like, it, because of your former, you know, your gig like ours, trying to come up with content, but trying to come up with content for you and Julie actually gives you the impetus to go and seek some things as adventures, but also it turns into the content of your show. So you're getting a lot out of it. It's very enriching, I imagine.
Well, that's the other thing, Howard, is that's kind of the reason that we moved here, was to do exactly what we're doing for the podcast. So, you know, one hand feeds the other, and it just works out really well. Like if we didn't have the podcast, we probably wouldn't be stepping on the gas every week to go visit places. But now that we are, it's kind of a part of our it's really great.
Now, I was talking to Jeff a couple weeks ago, Fred, and he informed me, and I'm not sure if this has made the podcast yet, but I imagine it will. Jeff tells me that he's stumbled across a French adult baseball league.
Yes. We've talked about it for the last 3 weeks. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So maybe set it up, because Jeff was like one of those guys who likes to play ball. He's a catcher. Not a hitter. It don't have to be when you put, you know, behind the plate. But just set it all up for me and let the audience know.
Well, I was So it was a very moist winter here, and my gear was all in the barn, and it was getting, you know, because I brought all my gear, because it's really means a lot to me, my catcher stuff, especially the gloves, and it was getting all moldy. So I'm in the kitchen, and I'm cleaning it up, and I'm, you know, bemoaning the fact that I'll never use it again. And Julie gets on the internet, and she goes, you know what? There is a men's baseball league, and there's a team in Agen, which is a 30-minute drive. It's where I pick you up at the train. And so I call these guys, and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to waltz in here and show these kids a thing or two. Holy shit, are they good baseball players.
Really?
I mean, so I made the team. By the way, I had to pass a medical at the doctor's office. I had to do 30 of these.
Really?
Yeah, I had to. Yeah, I had to pass a medical.
Back up a second.
Yeah, no,
you had to pass a physical.
Yeah, because I needed a license to play baseball in France.
No.
Yes.
You're kidding.
That's hysterical.
No, Freddie.
And does it cost money?
Well, it was $120 a year, but that's mainly to the team. But there was I don't think there was a cost for the, but I did have to go to a doctor, and she had to tick a bunch of boxes off and do my heart and the whole business. Fred, when you come here, we'll have a couple of beers, and I will just tell you all the administration here. It'll just make your head swim. But yeah, there's another one.
So the baseball team, is it French guys or expats over there?
I'm the only guy who speaks English on the team, so I miss out on. There are a couple of guys who speak English, and they help me out with the translation.
Yeah.
It's all French guys, and so we had our first game this weekend. And I had the most abysmal first at bat that I've ever had in my life. I was struck out on 3 pitches. I'm telling you, if someone was showing a video of my at bat, there should be some kind of disclaimer that says, please be advised that this at bat contains deeply disturbing images.
How do you say swing and a miss in French?
Bye-bye. But these guys can play, and it was an 11-hour day because I had to drive to Bordeaux. We don't have a field. We don't have an actual diamond. So we have to drive to all these places, our team. But we're in second place. We won both games.
And what position are you playing?
Well, I just happened to unluck into a team that has about 5 really good catchers. So I was playing second base, everybody hits right, so I didn't get any plays. But I didn't embarrass myself, but I was 0-for-2 at the plate.
How old are these guys?
Well, some of them are like 22. And
holy cow.
Yeah, when I was playing second, you know, at the end of the warm-up each inning, the catcher throws to second base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This kid threw it on a rope. I mean, oh my God, it was so great. But it was great catching a guy, and I have caught some of the pitchers, and these guys are throwing 80 plus miles an hour.
Nice.
And that was really fun just to catch.
Well, it's got to be fun just to be out in the field. And like, is there enough, like you speaking of, or let me not say this in an assumptive way. Do you speak enough French to feel comfortable back and forth or no?
Not back and forth. I can speak and I can make a point, but these guys are going like 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, of course.
It's just so impossible to understand them.
Have you been able to have the conversation like why? Why baseball? How did they, you know what I mean? How was baseball a thing there?
Their passion for baseball far outweighs the passion that I experienced in Canada. One of the reasons is that it is, there are only 14,000 players in the entire country.
Wow.
At an amateur level. There are a handful of guys who are in the minor leagues of Major League Baseball from France.
Wow.
So that's kind of encouraging.
Yeah.
But their passion for this game is unbelievable. They know the game. They have great swings. They have incredible technique. It's just
you got to figure if there's only 14,000 players, the guys that do play are really into it.
Really into it.
I wanted to follow up though on, you know, I spent the winter, last couple of winters, playing golf with a lot of Mexicans. So little by little, I picked up a lot of the sort of the vernacular of golf in Spanish. And I'm wondering, like, again, you know, there's certain things people say. you know, when you're golfing in Spanish that I just really picked up, or the names of things. Are you starting to get that, or do you think you will?
I picked up one, and it's when you're, you know, it's a fly ball in the infield, and, you know, in English, mine, I got it.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
them, it's je l'ai. So je, and then le, meaning for the it, and then A-I is avoir, which is have. So je l'ai, I have it.
Nice.
I have it. So I learned that on Sunday.
Dude, this is going to be so good. How many games you get to play in a season with these guys?
Well, it depends whether, I go to the hospital after every game. I mean, it's just, I'm just a wreck. Everything on my body today is just sore. So we don't play next week. And then we only play every Sunday until the end of May. And then I think they shut the season down until the fall. And then they open it again because it gets so hot.
Mm.
But it's great. It's fun.
Have you had any hockey opportunities there, or is it not nearly
Apparently, there's a rink in Toulouse, but that's that's 90 minutes each way. But mm-hmm. yeah, I did bring my skates. I would love to play.
Yeah. You know, I didn't tell you this, Freddie, but in my little town there in Mexico, every Sunday in the school schoolyard where they have like a basketball net set up and like a pretty big, there's a bunch of Canadians that get together and play road hockey every Sunday. Usually dads and their kids.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, and some Mexicans as well, but it's really a cool game. And I pass it by, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, because I got to know some of the guys that are playing it. And it's usually them and their sort of 10, 11, 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, you had no interest in going and kicking it around? No?
Anything that interferes with golf, Jeff, you know I have no interest in it.
Okay.
So there was something you brought up to us. A friend of ours, Scott Turner, who we all worked with. You worked with him later. Fred worked with him before I met him, but we were all together at CFNY years ago. And this is kind of apropos of something I brought up with Freddie a couple weeks ago, that it occurred to me, I actually saw something that Scott Turner said, sent me, about August 8th is the 35th anniversary of the Humble and Fred Show. And a lot of people on the show know how we kind of got together. And actually, the three of us were involved in this momentous occasion. But in April of 1989, another event happened at CFNY that sort of put all this in place. And maybe you can pick it up from there, Jeff.
Yeah, the Pixies were not allowed on the air. And I am steaming about, I've been seething about this since 1989. 35 years of hell for me. So I'm reading Scott. And by the way, my two favorite program directors that I've ever worked for were Danny Kingsbury and Scott Turner. So, Scott was just, Scott was so amazing. He had so many just interesting ways of working with jocks and Danny as well. So it's interesting that Scott posted this. And then there was a comment on there. And I can't believe this is a grown man. So, and help me out here, because again, I know that there was a whole deal with the music and it was, you know, alt rock and it was a big deal, but, Ivor Hamilton said Danny refused to play the Pixies on CFNY. There was no hotter band in the world of alternative at the time, a low point in NY history. A low point in NY history. So a band is not allowed to be played, and a grown man 35 years later is triggered still by the fact that this band was not on the playlist. What can you help me with this, please? Because and then, of course, there's a stream of people going, oh, yeah, I remember them, on and on. And I like, help me out here, guys. Really, I'm gobsmacked by the fact that a person would be 35 years just festering about a band. I mean, because here's the thing. We all complained about the music, but when we lose the battle at 10 o'clock in the morning, we go home and we forget about it.
Well, no. Not there, they didn't.
Okay.
No, they didn't. And I can give you a little bit of that history. Ivor was okay. Who's a sweetheart guy. He's a darling. One of my dearest friends, Howard. He's a friend of Howard's as well. Yeah,
very sweet guy.
The passion for that radio station and the music is like something... Well, it was to the point of aggravation for me because I always came from the standpoint, hey, guys, this is a business. And yeah, you know, the music's great and everything, but they got to make some money here. All that aside, Ivor was the music director, I guess, right up till 87. Then he went to Universal Music, PolyGram, wherever it was at the time. And I guess he was pushing music. And the Pixies would have been one of them. And I guess he approached Danny, who was the program director at the time at CFNY in 89, and said, you should be playing this. And I'm sure Danny said, well, you know what? We're going in a little bit of a different direction now. I don't think so.
And, okay, can I just, if he's such a great guy, and I don't know him, I've never...
Oh, he is. That's not even up for question. Not even up for question.
Okay, yeah. Well then, if that were to be the case, in this post, unless this is a bit of a joke, because would you not have said, hey, you know what, I may have had some musical differences with Danny, but he did, you know, he brought Humble and Fred to the CFO, you know, right. blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like, would there not have been a better way that you could have posited
maybe.
That?
Yeah, maybe. I love Danny's response. Danny says,
oh, it's hilarious.
Danny says, the stuff one learns on Facebook, huh? And he goes on to say, anyhow, sorry you've been carrying that for so long. Might be okay now to let that one go. But and I don't have much to add to what Fred said other than having experienced the place. After I left you in 1988, working at a pretty regular radio station, my entire career prior to that had been working at high-level commercial radio stations. I go to CFNY, and it was like going back to college. I'd never seen anything like it. Because to us, and we're on the air in other places, you know, you might say, why are we playing that song? They say, because. Right. And then you go, okay, well, I've got to go now and think of some cool shit to say in between the songs.
That's it. That's it.
But at CFNY, it was different. Their passion, the place was different. The history of the place was different. I mean,
thing by Ivor's just sort of like, I take that more as just a little anecdote. You know what I mean? Of something that happened at the time, shitty low point in CFNY. That's a bit dramatic, but that's what it was all about.
If that's your low point.
No, I would argue the low point was us getting hired, but that's another whole other thing. That's all
the irony. The irony of all that is that, you know, Danny came in. And listen, Danny, and what these guys couldn't get their head around, Danny came in because a company bought the radio station and wanted to make some money. And what the station was doing. Wasn't going to generate the revenue that what we might do could do. So Danny had a job. He was a grown man. And that's what used to bug me about working at CFNY at the time. Grow up. This is a business, you know. And Danny was a grown man who came in and had a job to do, and he was doing it. And same with me. You know, I was blessed. David Marsden, loved him as a PD. Danny Kingsbury, Stuart Myers, my three favorite. And sort of three different genres, so to speak. But he was a grown man that had a job to do. And he was
concerned about ratings, and he really did well with ratings.
Of course.
The of his and so Danny, who had come from grown-up radio, we'll call it. I call it like, you know, I was a commercial jock. Danny came from commercial radio, grown-up radio. And what he does is he comes in, he says, okay, we need a morning show. We get hired. And then Danny leaves. He left, you know, pretty quickly after the show got put on the air. And he was replaced by literally a fucking nut named Reiner Schwartz, who in one of the first meetings, Lumby, we had with him, I remember this, he looked at us and said, I know we could, maybe we'll be the station that doesn't say the call letters. And I remember going home and telling ex-wife Randy, I may need to find another job. Because this guy thinks it would be cool if we didn't say the name of the radio station. I remember saying in that meeting, well, how will people know? Oh, they'll just know. Okay, that's fucking great. That's great in a diary-based rating system.
Well, when I started my little diatribe there a minute ago, that was what I meant by irony. So you have Danny Kingsbury, a sweetheart of a man, knew the business inside out, was so encouraging, had a job to do as a grown-up. He had a family. He had a mandate for the company. The irony was, so he leaves, and the very people that would criticize Danny Kingsbury would applaud or embrace this Reiner Schwartz. Again, a nice man. But you know how many adults he drove out of that place? And I won't name them, but one very good friend of ours. Well, yeah, Howard,
me.
Right. Yes. You know, it was like, okay, I'm a grown-up now. You know, I want to buy a house and have a mortgage and raise kids and stuff like that. I better get the fuck out of here because this is a problem. Yeah. And it was. Reiner, he was a joke. He was.
Friend, I got the first job offer I got, I was out of there.
Yeah.
I left. So. I got there in August of 1989, and by May of 1991, I was gone because I couldn't deal with the guy who wanted. By the way, we got to get going because we do have it. We have another person that's standing by, as we often do.
Yes,
but yes. I want the takeaway that, you know, listen, we love Danny. Jeff and I worked for him. Fred and I worked for him, and one of the great programmers. Managers, and same with Ivor. Ivor's a great guy. He's always been kind to me, and worked with Freddie. And yeah, you know, Ivor. I'll tell you what. Ivor's the kind of guy that if you met him, you'd like him too.
I probably would. I'm just taking to task his comment. No,
I get it.
That's all.
I don't know what to get.
But listen, normal. And I don't even want to say. Well, normal radio guys can't relate to that passion.
Yeah.
I worked there for years, and I couldn't relate to it because I was just too sort of pragmatic or logical. Like, guys, this is a business. We're not in fucking college anymore.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd like to buy a house. Thank you. You know, like.
And to Howard's point earlier, what we do is we look at things that go between the songs. You know, that
exactly.
Song,
yeah, exactly.
For me, the songs get in the way. You know, it's just like, you know, so to hear that a low point of radio station was when the Pixies were
well, because we can't relate to it. By that point, I'd been in radio. By the time I came to CFNY, I'd been in radio for 13 years, since I was 17 years old, and never had a discussion about what fucking music we were playing.
Right.
That was somebody else's job.
Right.
But in honor of all of this, Jeff, I'd like to play some Pixies for you, my friend.
Great. Guess what? This will be a first for me.
Same with
me.
Listen, I worked there. And same with me. I couldn't tell you a Pixie song. I actually was going to. Here we go. This is what all the hullabaloo was about. Jeff Lumby. Jeff and Julie moved to France during a global pandemic. New episodes every Friday. And we'll see you in 1 month's time, my friend.
Oh, I know I'm mortified.
Yeah, I know this.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Take care.
See you, Jeff.
See you, boys. All right, you guys. Take. Cheers.
Yeah.
Wow. Excellent.
No, but that is where he and I and Kingsbury came from, which was
right.
Music was something that somebody else dealt with. And when I got on my shift, I was given a list of music to play, and I just played it.
Right. It's funny how this stuff pops up, because that was a bit of an issue with Jeff, because he had read that on Scott's Facebook page. You know what, you love social media?
Yeah.
Anyway, and I was talking to Ivor last week, and he said, hey, do you think you and Howard could... me and Scott could take you out for lunch. We want to pick your brain on, you know, starting a podcast and maybe how to market it. And I said, of course we would do that for you.
Absolutely. when they say take us out for lunch, that means they're going to pay, right?
I would assume.
Is there a budget? Do we say, like, is it like, you know, like wings?
You do, or? Whatever they take is, you just look at the most expensive thing in the menu and order it,
right,
whether you like it or not.
I just want to know what entree level we're talking about. I'll tell you one thing that will save you money, and I have the research. We talked about this last week. The idea that the Bank of Canada, you know, held the line, did not raise. Where is it here? Just want to make sure I get this. Yeah, Bank of Canada held the policy rate steady at 5%. Why is that important to you? Because I guarantee you, when you got your mortgage a few years ago, it was a lot more expensive than it's going to be, and that's why you need Mike Kazarian, one of the broker owners of Lender's Choice Mortgages. independently owned and operated member of Mortgage Alliance License 13582. What they do is they take their experience and you get to benefit from it. And like I said, this whatever rates you're going to get, you got to shop around now, because maybe before when the rates were so low, it didn't matter. You went to your bank, it was 1 point something or 3 point this or whatever it was. But now more important than ever, because it's going to save you money based on the term, based on the kind of mortgage it is. They shop it around. They don't just go to banks. They have 75 lenders they deal with. They deal with credit unions and monoline lenders, private lenders, banks as well. And as I like to end by saying, they can find a solution, whatever that is, for all your mortgage financing needs. And it's important, if you want to support us, to support our sponsors, at least give Mike a call. Reach out to him, mike@lenderschoice.ca. Lenders Choice Mortgages. Also, you can find out more at lenderschoice.ca. Friedrich?
Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager, Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim sent us an article, the top 25 countries for retirement in 2024, and we'll be talking about that in an upcoming edition of the Sherpa. You know, stuff like health, quality of life, material well-being, finances in retirement, and, you know, does your plan take all of this stuff into account? Very, very interesting. I was looking at the rankings, and just so you know, Canada ranks above the United States. Yes, it does. And don't forget, if you have a portfolio and you'd like somebody to have a second look at it, Tim Niblett, Jay Bondi, the guys to have that look for you, and they'll let you know whether you're on track or maybe you need some adjustments or changes. No obligation. The Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca. Mr.
Sandman. Just before Nick gets here, you know, we talk a lot of shit about the USA, and I was thinking about the fact that I'm going down there for the first time in a long time. In fact, I think this is my first trip to the States. It sounds weird saying this because, you know, for most of the time I've lived here, for most of my adult life, I traveled a lot to America. Lived in California, spent a lot of time going back and forth. I've lived in border cities, lived in Vancouver, went to Washington a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Lived here, go to, you know, Western New York, gone to New York City, Florida, all that stuff. And this is my first time since the pandemic. And that's not the only reason, but I came back from Phoenix. I was there when I got sick. That was February of 2020. When's the last time you were? No, you've been recently. You went down for some baseball stuff or for a trip?
No, I was there in December. In Florida.
In December?
Yeah.
What were you doing in December?
For 12 days with Darren and Laura.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And I forgot that you did that, because I do remember you went on your trip with the kids.
Yes, that was another one.
Did you fly down in December or drive down?
Flew down.
To Vero Beach?
Vero Beach.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going back to America. I'm going there. I don't know. It'll be fine.
Yeah, let me just mention something, too. You know, I was a big fan of Bill Maher, and I say was because he's really losing me, especially on the COVID stuff, because he's brilliant 4 years later, right? He has all the answers 4 years later, which irks me, bugs me the wrong, rubs me the wrong way. And then apparently on Real Time Friday night, he went off on Canada a bit, making comparisons to the United States that his just whiz. He's on this thing now that you can go too far left, you know. As far as he's concerned, the far right will turn, or the far left can turn middle people right, which I agree with on some level.
I get the logic of that.
Yeah. So anyway, he was just making some comparisons, and he said, look at Canada, 14 of the top 20 cities in North America. Canadian cities with the worst air pollution. Well, he didn't mention that it was, you know, wildfires.
I know.
Because that was a big story. That was a big issue. Then he's talking about our housing crisis might be worse than the U.S. Well, when half your country can live in trailers and shanties, that can really sort of alleviate a housing
problem.
Kind of
skews it a bit, yeah.
Excuse it. Now, and then he's talked about unemployment rates. Well, apparently in the States, they count part-time jobs. We don't. Anyway, it was just another, it was like Joe Rogan or all these other assholes that attack Canada for whatever reason. I think because of Trudeau, they look at him as some left-wing whack job. And they attack Canada with all this misinformation, or they're just so uninformed. It drives me crazy.
You know, I saw that clip, and I when he got to the when he got to the pollution thing, I was kind of like, come on, Bill, that's not like you. You know, it disappointed me. I don't feel as strongly about it as you, but I did. It was disappointing because of that. I'm like, that's just another lie of omission. It's another, you know, it's a workaround. It doesn't, because if it, because the truth didn't support your hypothesis that the pollution in those cities was bad because of horrific wildfires. But in actual cities, it's nowhere near as bad as the States.
No.
And then, of course, what you've just said, and I wasn't as aware of it. But again, it's disappointing because you sort of like the guy. He's funny and. The guy could play that clip I was telling you about earlier when he's talking about the, you know, how it irks him that these people have gone from, you know, death to Israel, you know, river to the sea people are now yelling death to America.
Yes.
And on that show, I don't want to play because we haven't got time. But Piers Morgan, who I also don't love a lot. But he did make a great point. He said, as far as the protesters yelling death to America, he says, why don't we say to them, fine, listen, you're exercising your right to free speech. Now go to Gaza and chant death to Hamas and see how many seconds you live.
No, great point. There you have it. Yep. Yep. Yeah, and I still watch. Like, I like real time, and I find it very thought-provoking and stuff. It's just... Bill's changed a bit. Like, he's really going hard on the far left. And I understand why he's doing that. Because he hates the right so much, far right so much, that he thinks the far left is actually producing right-wing people. Which could be true.
Which could, yeah, because it's because people are pushing back against what they see as, you know, super wokeism. In the meantime, as I mentioned, we have another guest today. It's time to catch up on the world. All things... Condo. And joining us for his report, it's the Condo Report. And welcome back to our program, Nick Innes, founder and CEO of Fusion Corp Developments, Inc.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, man.
Hey, guys. What's going on, guys?
In Toronto, FusionCorp.ca, author of Building Toronto Skyline, joins us again with some more mind-blowing condo information.
I'm here, guys. I'm here.
Talk to me.
I remember the last time, your last appearance, you, towards the end of it, you said there was something you wanted to talk about on this edition that we didn't get to the last time. Do you have that at hand?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot now.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. Way. I thought you'd be.
Well, you know what, guys? Well, we did. We were going to talk about like a total precast construction system, but you know, since then, I've actually kind of went through a number of articles. There's some interesting news stories happening in the condo industry these days.
Well, lay it on us, man.
Whatever you guys want.
No, that's the business. Well, give us the latest news in the exciting worlds of condo development.
Yeah, I thought I'd talk about something different. So just to mix it up a bit.
Do it.
So there's a lot of articles have been writing all over the newspaper publications, etc. And so there's a number of key takeaways. One, that condos appear to be the long-term solution for housing. But a lot of people, you know, believe it or not, they're not happy about how they're made and how they lack a really good design, and people want them to be a little bit more livable. I think that's a really good point. What do you guys think?
Sure. No, totally. Because the newer condos I've seen are weird because, you know, you have windows at the front, and sometimes, like the second bedroom, the light comes through an opaque door through the kitchen or something. Mm-hmm. They seem to be an odd design nowadays to maximize how many units they can get into a place.
Yeah, and I think it's a worthy point because we have to, like, as an industry in a whole, we got to make condos a little bit more exciting for people, because I think what happened is there, when on the marketing, you're going to have this great building, and then at the end, you get your unit, and it's kind of a big letdown, in my opinion. So, you know, how do you do that? Good question. I think there's an opportunity for developers to explore that a little bit, to cater to a variety of lifestyles and incorporate really good design in their new condos. And I think there's definitely an opportunity here. You know, I don't know about you guys, but you go to a nice 4 or 5 star hotel downtown, and it's, you get in there and you're like, wow, this place is amazing. That's the way a condo should be.
Yeah. You know, how much, getting back to the process, the purchasing, pre-construction, generally, and I don't know the answer, that's why I'm asking you, what kind of input does a buyer have in terms of design, if any?
Almost very little. In condos, we generally don't customize the design because there are so many units in one building, so it's a sort of a bit of a coordination issue, and you know, there's a lot of mechanical structural implications if you move bathrooms here.
No, I think you misunderstood. So what input, I know they can't change the design of the actual unit. What I kind of meant is what input do they have? What can they have input in?
They usually have an input into, like, you know, their, like, basic color scheme in the unit. They'll also have input in terms of some upgrades that they can put inside their unit as well. So they usually do what's called a color selection, upgrade selection process with the developer after they buy their unit. So that's the input that they have. They usually pick some of the finishes. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, even maybe we still fall short of that as well. So as an industry,
you know, a couple of condos that I've been in were previously apartments. They were switched over to condos, and they're older. But again, you know, that old cereal box design the apartment buildings had. So if you had a 2 or 3 bedroom unit, every bedroom had a nice big window. The living room had a window. The dining room had a window. How come condos can't be designed like that anymore? Again, they all seem to be this long, narrow sort of design, you know, the cheaper ones.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of the philosophy in the design, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's when you're building multiple units, mm-hmm. it's kind of like an assembly product, and you have to maximize your efficiencies in the building.
Yes, yeah.
So that's one of the key challenges, and that's probably why, you know, we fall short in terms of a design. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a factor of cost as well.
Yep.
So there's that balance. So, and then, you know, I've also, another article I thought was very interesting is the issue around affordability.
Yeah.
There was an article issued in Bloomberg, and they basically are stating that failure in lowering housing costs could put our general economy at risk. And we really need government to respond to this. They have to cut the red tape to get these buildings approved. They have to reduce municipal charges. And, you know, we got to get skilled trades here so we can start building more. So the immigration immigration has to be a little bit revamped to search for skilled trades that can come here and enter in Canada and start building our buildings for them.
Makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Development charges.
We always want to make sure we have some time to talk about your Orangeville development. It's 60, the number 60, on Broadway.com. Yes. And can you give us, it's been a few weeks, where are things at with that? When are people going to be encouraged to check it out?
Yeah, well, we are still working away on 60 on Broadway, and we're basically about to procure all the trade contractors for the project. So we're just about ready. We've been dealing with a last minute some design changes and some design issues that we had to solve, but we solved them right away. There's no problem with that. We offer our expertise in every project, and we're able to help the design team solve problems with by changing their input into a particular problem. But yeah, so that's still underway. We've got our Tarion application happening now. We just submitted for that. So you need your Tarion approvals before you can sell to any units in the building. So that's where we're at that stage. The sales office is underway. And yeah, we're super excited, but you know, it's only been 2 weeks, guys. I'm not a miracle worker.
No, exactly, man. I know,
but it's really amazing. So,
maybe you've told us this before, from the time that you get approval,
yes,
to completion, how long is that?
Okay, by the time you actually start to completion, it could be like 5 to 7 years sometimes.
No, I mean the construction part.
Oh, it's probably the construction part's about a couple of years.
That's what I mean. So yeah. somebody
depending
buys
on how big the, depending on how big the project is.
Okay. Mm. Oh, very good.
Yeah. So your average project will range from anywhere, if it's a smaller project, you know, it could be 14 to 16 months to 24 months.
All right.
And the idea is to get in early, right? Even pre-construction, it's a good idea to get in early.
It's always a good idea to do everything early as soon as you can, because
right,
you know, we're like an orchestra, and timing is everything. If you miss your timing, it delays things on the later stages.
Well, so we encourage people to check out number 60 on Broadway.com. Another great conversation with the founder and CEO of Fusion Corp Developments and the author of Building Toronto Skyline. Look at you, you beauty.
Hey, where can I get a Humble and Fred t-shirt? Are they available?
No, they're not. Okay. They're in pre. Right, we're in the planning and approval stage right now. We're waiting.
They're coming.
I want to get my Humble Fred t-shirt. I got to wear it for the show one of these days.
All right, buddy.
Okay,
take
buddy.
Care. Well, once we get approval, we'll get to. Right now is a good time to get in the pre-construction phase. All right, pal.
Have a great day, guys. You too, thank you.
Okay.
You
thanks, go. Nick.
There bye-bye. You go.
Right on, bud.
You got anything left?
Yes, Bodog.
Do it.
Yeah, you know, again, it changes all the time. This whole thing about the Stanley Cup playoffs and who's going to be favored and where the Leafs sit when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs and all that. So over the next couple of days, we'll revisit it early next week, because the playoffs will start. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sports book, to their fully loaded casino and race book, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. And just so you know, the Leafs are way down the list on odds for winning the Stanley Cup.
Hmm. Really?
Which you might expect.
Interesting.
Maybe next year.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Next year. Maybe next year.
Rebuilding.
Maybe next year.
We're rebuilding.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, your buddy Keith Pelly. He's taking control. Eh? He runs MLSE now. If the Leafs get an early exit from the playoffs, I think he's going to be making some moves.
Yeah, Keith is a guy. He started out at TSN. That's how I met him. Was the president of TSN. Then he moved over to Rogers, did that huge $5.2 billion deal for the all the hockey rights. Then he goes to the DP World Tour, where I reconnected with him, and he's the president of that tour, and I got to go over and hang out with him in Scotland. Now he's coming back to Toronto. I did send him a note a few months ago. Never got a response. That's fine. He's a busy man.
You think?
Yeah. Hey,
I know we don't really talk much about, we talked a lot about golf yesterday because of the Masters, but we haven't really dwelled on this thing, the LIV Tour. Did you hear this story yesterday?
What about it?
Most people by now, if you have a sports head at all, you've heard about this other tour. It took a bunch of players. It's run by the Saudis. It's a bunch of money, huge money. And there's a rumor. The last big, you know, guy they took over there was John Rahm. And I told you when it happened, he's the number one player, was number three player in the world. Mm-hmm. Last year's Masters champion, and a guy that would definitely move the needle, I thought. I thought, well, that's a pretty big thing. And while yesterday there's a rumor that Rory McIlroy is in talks to go over there for $850 million.
Wow.
Plus a percentage of the some stupid, they have these stupid golf teams. But anyway, it's a lot of money. It's Dan Duran money is what I'm saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot of money. How long does he have to golf for? Like if he falls, you know, down and breaks a, you know, an important golfing bone. Does he?
I don't know the details, Dan. It's not like, you know, golf's not like other sports. Like your career's not over. You know, you recover and you get back and you play. So I don't know the terms. Yeah.
Well, I would suspect these are the Saudis and $850 million, you know, to the powers that be, is not that significant.
No.
But I would imagine a guy like Rory McIlroy, before he lifted a club for LIV, that $850 would be in the bank.
Yeah.
I would imagine that would be his deal.
Well, and I think most of them, however they structure the deal, yeah, it would be, I don't even know how to put it in terms, because he was one of the big opponents of this, as was very well, very outspoken a couple years ago when this league was formed. And there's been this rumor now, and yesterday some of the terms were leaked. Anyway, we got Dan Duran's news here, and as always, brought to you by Boron One. Boron One, go to find out more about this company at boron1.com.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man, his voice is nice and low. Huh. Dan Duran, the anchor man comes, and as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Lisa's house, here he is, movie anchor, television series star, voiceover expert, and whatever you do, don't call him the farmer, or he may bludgeon you with his ball peen hammer, which is also what he calls his wiener. It's Dan Duran.
Hey, that coffee you're drinking this morning, it could be over 600,000 years old. They've been studying coffee, you know, because with global warming and climate change and all the things that are happening to the environment right now, they're worried about, you know, coffee's a bit of a, you know, under threat with insects and disease, and there's always sort of a monoculture going on. But they did some research and found out that Coffea arabica comes from a long time ago. And species emerged about 600,000 years ago through natural crossbreeding of two coffee species. So there you go. And it started in Ethiopia. And we really didn't, you know, do much with coffee until like the 1400s in Yemen. They started brewing it in the 1400s. In the 1600s, an Indian monk, Baba Budan.
Baba Budan.
Baba Budan.
To have smuggled 7 raw coffee beans back to his homeland from Yemen, and that started off the world.
Did he smuggle them in his butt like those other, like that other coffee, butt coffee?
Butt coffee,
isn't that cat shit coffee? Cat shit coffee, wasn't it?
Butt cat shit.
Cats.
Yeah. Baba Budan.
We've talked about this over the years in the show with all sorts of different products. Like, there's coffee beans. But who got the idea that those particular beans, let's grind them up and add some water and have a drink? You know what I mean? Like, where do these ideas come that sort of spawns the stuff that like who was part of everyday life now?
Who was the first person to, see some animal and it's dead? And they thought, hey, I've got a great idea. Let me throw that shit on the fire.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. And then they put it in the fire, and someone was like, oh, fuck, man, you overdid it. Mm-hmm. Fuck, don't throw it on the fire so much next time. Fucking take it off a little earlier.
I like it raw. What's this guy doing with fire? I really like this stuff.
Because up till then, they were just like gnawing on shit raw.
Guys, I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, do it.
I read recently. Did you know that the life expectancy really expanded with the invention of fire and the concept of cooking meat? Because people used to eat it raw, and they would die of all sorts of diseases eating raw meat from all these creatures. Yeah. Once the concept of cooking it over a fire, it killed a lot of those things.
All the life bacteria,
jumped quite a bit. I don't have the exact number of years.
Well, you should.
But, uh-huh.
You know, and you know how they died?
With worms.
With the rhea, man. They got fucking... those days, you would get the rhea, and there was no stopping it. You would basically shit yourself to death, and that would be the end of you. And it was at first, you're like, oh, I gotta go, and then you're like, I can't stop going, and then you just eventually fucking expire.
Yeah.
Just imagine that.
You know, back in the early days of... But, you know, even that, it was hunger, and, like, you could see guys wanting to eat. But, you know, coffee was just sort of like a... I don't want to say a luxury, but just like a refreshment. Just, you know, the process from a bean turning into a drink. Like,
right.
Somebody did
that.
What were they thinking?
And it's the same where, like, you know, somebody had some almonds... they dropped it in somebody else's chocolate, and it became a delicious treat for for movies and for watching television.
Yeah, this stuff is crazy. Did you know the life? Back when coffee was first discovered, what did you say, 6,000 years ago, Dan?
Well, they started using it in the 1400s.
That's 600 years ago.
Yeah, but 600,000 years is when it was like, that's when the plants were, kind of...
Now, did that come from Jesus? Did Jesus make those?
Yeah, it's pre-Jesus.
Pre-Jesus.
Because I was going to say that the Earth's only 2,000 years old. 2,024 years old. I forgot.
That's right. That. All right.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just imagine this. At one point, fire was trendy.
That's right.
It was a trend. Hey, the coffee or the cave guys down the road here, they've found something here.
Yeah, it's called fire. You can imagine some cave guy was getting shit from his cave wife. Hey, Gronk and his fucking Irma, Gronk and Irma down two caves away. They got fire. We got shit. We got nothing. Go get some fire. Yeah, it's funny how in that scenario, the guy's got a caveman name, but his wife's Irma. Listen, this part of Dan Duran's news brought to you by...
For my last email, we are on board.
Looking for a fast break from working so hard? When you're ready to box out some time for fun, it's time to play. It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. We make getting the latest basketball odds and free sports tips a slam dunk. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make a play.
All right. Thanks to Jeff Lumby and Nick, the Condo Report. Dan Duran, thank you for not bludgeoning Fred and or I in my dream.
Glad I restrained myself. Hey, when are we back, by the way?
Potentially next Tuesday. Unless there's
potentially? What's that?
What if there's a mishap on the road? You don't know, in a road trip, things could go awry. I'm planning to leave North Carolina, where I am going to be Sunday afternoon, and be back in Toronto by Monday evening. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying potentially next week from that's Tuesday the 23rd.
You should take the remote setup. Like tomorrow morning, you could be doing the show from like a Garden Inn in somewhere in Virginia.
Okay.
And then on the way back, you could be doing the show from like a Garden Inn in Morgantown.
Okay. Let me consider that.
How many guys are going?
Including myself, four.
Four, all in the same car?
No.
Oh, good.
That would be too many people in a car. I've got two of my buddies coming from New Brunswick, and me and my buddy from Barrie are leaving in an hour.
Have you got a road trip playlist that you're going to be playing?
I do not. I have Spotify, and I have SiriusXM, and I have Netflix.
Yeah, that's great. Although I got to admit, driving home from Burley Falls on Sunday, my phone, I had the Masters on. It was on my dash, but I only looked when it got exciting. Which is hard when you're listening to it, because exciting golf talk is like,
yeah.
Well, goes from this to this.
Well, yes, it does. And to be fair, you can't watch Netflix on the Tesla. When you stop, you can, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can put it on your phone, but just it doesn't, the system.
The system overrides, yes. It's an overridden system. So that's right. It. Well, have a great week, everybody. And we will see you a week from today. And Dan, thank you for your contribution.
Yeah.
And I hope to see you at the anti-Hamas protest. I hope you'll be there.
Don't kid yourself.
Yeah.
It'll just be you and I.
Right.
All right.
Okay, we'll stand there. Do our thing.
Yes, we will.
Hey, this episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. Our contest and comments, we read the emails. Send them to us. Tell us what you think to Humble and Fred at humbleandfredradio.com. We do appreciate you telling your friends about us, subscribing to the podcast, sharing an episode, and, give us hearts and stars or whatever's available on your podcatcher. For Humble and Fred from the Insert Your Name Here Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And if you dream a little dream of me, I promise not to hit you with my shiny ball-peen hammer. But if Fred calls me a farmer one more time, it's going to be a nightmare.
Enjoy every goddamn day.
Clap your hands. Where's that?